Clones, what's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. It is a big, big day and an enormous week. Let's get going. Welcome to the show, brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Welcome to the jungle. Telephone number is toll-free. My first interview is not until 40 past hour number one, so you can get through right now. 1-800-636-8686. It's an easy day to get involved. There is so much to cover. What do you want to hit on? Again, 1-800-636-8686. I'd love for you to follow me on Twitter. If you're not already, I might follow you back. I might read one of your tweets on the air. I might retweet it. Hit me up at Jim Rome. And, of course, the email is still Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. I'm going to set it up like this. Coming up at 40 past hour number one, a reporter with NFL Network, Tom Pelissero. Also coming up later on, we preview the national championship game. Who do you have? LSU or Clemson? A college sports writer for Sports Illustrated, Pat Forty, is my guest. That's coming up in the middle of hour number two. In hour number three, an NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, Therese Paylor. And I've got an ATP and lots of takes, lots to get to. Once again, quickly, 1-800-636-8686. Man, that was some kind of weekend, wasn't it? Hell of a weekend. San Francisco started the weekend off with a dominant win over the Vikings. A dominant win over the Vikes, and then an amazing post-game soundbite from Richard Sherman.
It was man coverage. You know, I get tired of hearing, oh, man, he's a zone corner. I get tired of hearing the excuses for why I'm great. It was man coverage. I covered the man. I picked the ball off. In the playoffs, in big games, I show up. I show up year in, year out, whether it's 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. Unless I tear my Achilles, I'm out there and I'm doing my job at a high level. And I think I get tired of the excuses, you know, for why I'm good. Oh, my God, they're playing zone. Oh, my God, it was this guy. Oh, my God, receiver slipped. Oh, my God. It's like, why don't other people get those ops then? You know what I mean? There's a lot of other corners out there who have the same ops I have, you know. It's odd. It's like people got frustrated that I was so confident early on in my career. I was so confident early on so that people wanted me to fail. And when I didn't fail, it's like, how do we tear them down in other ways? How do we find a way to tear him down? You know what I mean? How do we find a way to rip his game apart? Because I'm too consistent on a year-in, year-out basis. You know, since I got in the league, every category that matters to a corner, I'm number one in.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, this is a big Richard Sherman house. You know what it is if I'm going to play a soundbite that runs 90 seconds. This guy's amazing. I love the beginning of that when he says, I'm sick of all the excuses as for why I'm great. How many guys can look you right in the eye and say, hey, listen, look at me. I am great. Stop trying to make excuses for why I'm great.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game.
You know, he might be. He might be even post Achilles tear. I know he's still the best quote in the game. Vikings, Niners, good game. But that soundbite was the best part of that game. And it normally is if we're lucky enough to have somebody stick a mic or a camera in Sherm's face, especially after he makes a play. Like he said, unless he's got it a shredded Achilles, this dude always delivers, especially on the big stage, both on and off the field. And then, all hell broke loose in Baltimore. But what went down in Baltimore was tame compared to yesterday in Kansas City. So I'll get to the Titans and the Ravens in a minute, but first, I've got to start with Houston at KC. Because Baltimore's start to their game was brutal, but then KC saw Baltimore and shouted, hey y'all, watch this!
Hey y'all, watch this!
You think that's bad? You think that's blowing a golden opportunity? We can do so much better. And by so much better, I mean so much worse. Let's give up a touchdown on Houston's opening drive. Not just a touchdown, but a wide, open touchdown.
Wants it to throw. Airs it out. Left side. Downfield. Stills across the 25. 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. Houston strikes first.
Dude, there was nobody within 20 yards of that cat. That was bad. That was bad. But again, they had to be thinking, yeah, but we can do so much worse. Why don't we start dropping every ball thrown our way? Yeah, we can do that. But we can still do worse. How about a punt blocked on our first possession? Check.
Back inside the 11-yard line. Snap on target. And the Texans block it. It's loose at the 10-yard line. Lottie to the right side, the 5. He's in. Touchdown, Houston. A special team score.
Texans radio. Kansas City was already down 14-0. The game wasn't even 5 minutes old. KC fans were stunned. They were stunned and they were about to get pissed because everything that Kansas City had done so well during the regular season was about to go right out the window. The Chiefs had good special teams in the regular season. In fact, not just good, really good. Number one, according to PFF. A great specials team unit that promptly allowed a punt block on the big stage and then chased it with this.
He puts him back there when it's important.
Big hang time. Ball's fumbled by Hill. Down at the six in a fight for the football.
I mean, how huge is this right here?
Here was Tyreek Hill, who had one punt return on the whole year, but Andy Reid and the Chiefs felt like, well, it's going to be Houston football.
How huge? Really huge. And that's not all. That was followed by this.
Second and goal. Watson puts the leg down. Here's the snap. Deshaun to throw over the middle. Got a man. Fells. Touchdown, Houston. Up three TDs to nothing.
Like the damnedest thing ever. Even for the Chiefs, which I will get to in a minute. But 21-0, Texans and Chiefs fans were booing at that point because nobody saw that coming. Nobody at all. Although maybe you should have after Saturday night. But even then, if you thought that Houston would get out to a great start, there was still no way you saw Houston being up on them 21-0 in the first quarter and the home fans booing already. Because that was every KC fan's worst nightmare. I mean, sure, they've had some devastating playoff defeats. Sure, Chiefs fan, you are conditioned to expect the worst this time of year. Except admit it, this time it was going to be different. This time it was going to be different because your team was better. And just as importantly, it was going to be different this time because everything had lined up perfectly. You got the bye, thanks to Miami. You got home field for the rest of the playoffs, thanks to Tennessee. It was going to be different because it was all setting up perfectly. The easiest path to the Super Bowl had opened right up. But deep down, then again, we are talking about the Chiefs and we are talking about the playoffs. And you've got so much freaking scar tissue that deep down you had to be worried. You had to be fearing the worst. You had to be thinking your team was going to find a way to blow it. The Kansas City was going to go Kansas City. And then sure enough, right on cue, they did. At least this time, the team that had tortured you in the past had the decency to get it over with an early, clean kill yesterday. You know, the decency to put you out of your misery quickly. The decency to choke you out in the first quarter and then let you relax for the next three. And then Houston was driving with that 21-0 lead, looking to go up four TDs and run a stake right through your heart. They were going to finish you right then and there in the first quarter. But then, in the first of a series of whack decisions by Bill O'Brien, they opt for a 31-yard field goal instead of trying to convert fourth and one from the 13 with Deshaun Watson. Like, they had their hands right around your throat. But instead of choking you out, they let go. They went for the break instead of the gas. And then everything changed. Now, I'm not going to come in here and say that going for the field goal and that taking the points and playing it safe explains what happened next. I'm going to give Kansas City the credit. I'm going to say Kansas City made that happen. But Houston obviously had something to do with this. They were willing accomplices. The Texans were active in their own destruction. Hell yes, they were. Starting with the kickoff after the field goal, which got returned to the Houston 42. Like, if the Chiefs were looking for a spark, they found it. And then Pat Mahomes dumped gasoline all over that spark two plays later.
Middle blitz picked up. Left side throw caught. 10-5, touchdown! Damian Williams, touchdown! Kansas City on a quick shoot route to the running back for 17 yards and a touchdown.
Chiefs radio. And now it's 24-7. Houston, except Arrowhead, had been awoken. And so had the Texans' ability to blow games. Because on the very next possession, Houston did this.
And they fake it. They snap it to Reed, and he is stopped by Sorensen. They snap it to the up back, and Reed is denied.
Well, that's pretty freaking curious, isn't it? I mean, sure, you probably don't want to give the ball back to Kansas City and Mahomes. You don't want him getting into a rhythm and letting that crowd back in it, especially if your defense can't stop them. But if you aren't going to go for it on fourth and one from the KC 13, then what the hell are you doing going for a fake punt on fourth and four from your own 31? And if you really are going to do something like that, you sure as hell better convert it. Because if you don't, you know that's the one play everybody's going to point to for the rest of the game and then the entire offseason. Again, I'm all about playing aggressively. But where was that aggression on 4th-and-1 when you had a chance to go up 4 touchdowns and possibly finish them right then and there? So you know what happens next, right? The Chiefs are not fooled. Sorensen blows it up. And not only are the Chiefs back in the game, suddenly they're holding the dagger. At that point, with the Texans fully imploding, it was not a question of if KC would win, but by how much. Because here's what happened next. Quick recap of the next few plays. KC TD. Houston fumbles the kickoff. KC TD. From 24-0 to 24-21 in 3 minutes and 24 seconds, that is the epitome of a choke job. And Houston was only getting started. They had so much more to give. So many more ways to melt down and choke. Like another KC touchdown before halftime. So just think about that for a minute. Houston went from being up 24-0 with less than 11 minutes to go in the first half to trailing 28-24 going into halftime. That is nearly impossible to do. Now, if you told a team to blow a lead like that, I'm not sure they could have done it any better than Houston did. And do me a favor, save this bull crap about if you had told the Texans before that game they'd be down just 4 going into halftime on the road in the AFC title game, they would have taken that all day long. The hell they would. Not if they were spotted a 24-point lead that could have been 28, and they were. And there was still so much more choking to do. That's why this rant is so long, because there was so much more choking to do, like coming out of halftime and giving up 2 more touchdowns to make it 41-24. 41 unanswered points. 41 unanswered points in a playoff game. That is straight stupid. And when Houston finally did get on the board again, KC scored yet again, giving them 7 straight touchdowns. It was like Houston jumped out to a lead and then decided to just nap it out. It went from the greatest win in team history to the greatest choke job in team history. And I'm not taking anything away from KC. They turned it around. Patrick Mahomes and that crew showed a ton of heart and character by finding a way to win when it would have been so much easier just to lay down trailing by 24. Instead, it was the Texans who stopped playing, not the Chiefs. But as much as this is about what KC did, it's also about how Houston absolutely self-destructed. And the meltdown starts at the very top. Is there anybody in that league that you trust less with a 24-0 lead than Bill O'Brien? Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, the guy does know a lot about football. A lot. But he's one of the few guys wearing a headset that makes a 24-0 lead seem shaky. That it's not like that call sheet should be going up on Romeo Crennel's mantelpiece either. Like, I know the Texans were banged up defensively and the KC is loaded, but you couldn't get one stop. You couldn't get a single stop at any point during that run of 7 straight TDs. I mean, get the hell off the field. Even once? That was too much to ask? Apparently it was. So from scoreless in the first quarter to putting up 51 for the game, it's a hell of a swing by KC's offense and one hell of a meltdown and tank job by Houston's defense. Got so bad at one point that the scoreboard in Arrowhead claimed that they had run out of fireworks to shoot after TDs. Yeah, but don't bring any of this around O'Brien. Don't bring any of this around Bill. He seems to think that overall, things are actually pretty damn good.
You know, I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
Wait, what? I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
You know, I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
My man, you just turned a 24-point lead into a 20-point beatdown in a playoff game. That's not moving in the right direction. In fact, that's pretty much the opposite of moving in the right direction. Like, I know you're talking about the overall direction of the organization, but that was a soul-snatching loss. The kind of thing that can destroy a team for years. The type of thing that stays with anyone and everyone who had anything to do with it for the rest of their lives. It's always going to be there. Just ask the Falcons. Ask them what 28-3 means to them. You think any of them were saying, oh, we're moving in the right direction after that? Last time I saw a team implode like that in the playoffs, coaches were punching each other on the sideline. And now Kansas City is advancing, and Houston's got to try to figure out what the hell just happened. Or better yet, what the hell they just did to themselves. As I tweeted last night, Bill O'Brien, the GM, is going to have a long talk with Bill O'Brien, the head coach, when he gets back to Houston. The question then is, does the GM fire the coach? And if so, does the owner then fire the GM? Because that choke job was that bad. Credit KC for not laying down with that giant deficit. Just make sure you crack the Texans for lying down with that giant lead, because that's exactly what they did. 1-800-636-8686. Man, Chiefs fan, how were you feeling down 24-0? I couldn't help but think, man, this is going to go so horribly wrong and badly for my man Andy Reid. It just is. And then they dug in. What an amazing comeback that was. All right, I've got that and a whole lot more. That's your monster block to open the program. I've got thoughts on the other matchups. I want to look ahead to tonight's championship game. I want to look ahead to the conference championship games in the coming weekend and a lot more. And yes, I will revisit the big head, the flight deck's picks. He went 2-2 for the weekend. 1-800-636-8686. Tom Pelissero coming up at 40 past, meaning next segment is wide open. So it's definitely a winter. And the thing about winter is that it's scary on the outside, but man, it is beautiful and cozy on the inside, especially when you're staying indoors with your Casper. From award-winning mattresses to pillows, sheets, and duvets, Casper transformed the way we all sleep. It keeps us cozy all season long because the Casper mattress is an award-winning balance of comfort and support. That's because the four layers of premium foam are designed to provide pressure relief for all-night comfort, and the zone support will keep your back aligned with extra support. So from bedding, bed frames, even now a dog bed, Casper has everything you need to build the bed of your dreams and your dog's dreams. As always, Casper's got free shipping and returns. Start waking up on the right side of the bed. Go to Casper.com. Use the code COZY and get 10% off any purchase with a mattress today. That's Casper.com. The code for this is COZY. And then take 10% off your entire mattress order. Terms and conditions do apply. See Casper.com/terms.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Monday is always an Ask the Pros Day. So you get to ask me a question, and it's always brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Submit your question. Listen later on in the program. I might answer yours. And thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. This is arguably the best time of the year. Arguably the best time of the year. Definitely our busiest time of year because we're getting ready for our Super Bowl coverage. Also, the NFL on CBS is traveling to KC for this weekend's matchup, and I will be there with everybody. So I'm fired up. They are taking the show on the road. The NFL on CBS broadcasting live from Kansas City. And as I mentioned, Chiefs fan, I got to know, like, what was going through your head? What was going through your head when you fell behind early? And not just fell behind early, but fell behind 24 early on. I mean, the worst possible thoughts, right? But then, I'm not saying I knew right then and there that the comeback was on, but when they settled, when the Texans settled for that field goal, when they had a chance on 4th-and-1 to go up 4 TDs, I thought to myself, man, that's not good. You're great. I know you don't want to leave any points on the field, but you got a chance to finish them right now. Drive that dagger through them, but they didn't. And you leave that window open just a crack. When you've got Pat Mahomes on the other side, you have to know that could come back to bite you in the ass. And it did. Quick reaction to hour number one. Dear Jim, I lived through the Oilers debacle in Buffalo. I lived through the stagger lead play against Denver. I even remember the Mel Renfro out of bounds ruling against the Steelers. But yesterday hurt. Tremendous choke job. Signed Rich, north of Houston. For sure, right? Like, I mean, I don't necessarily think that Bill O'Brien's going to stand up there and say, you know what? We choked and are hurt. Although Marlon Humphrey did, which I'll get to a little bit later on. But for O'Brien to stand up there in front of everybody and say, you know what? We're on the right path. This organization is headed in the right direction.
You know, I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
Really? Is that how you feel, Bill? Nobody else feels that way. not after blowing a 24-point lead in a playoff game, and not only blowing that lead, but losing by 20. That really is not easy to do. Dear Jim, please allow me to make the following outstanding programming decisions for today's show. Cancel all interviews and instead let Ike Ritt deliver a 2-hour and 48-minute monologue. Cut the takes on this weekend's NFL games and just play audio highlights of yesterday's pro bowling tournament in Akron. And if that lame Brad in Corona calls in, put him on hold for the rest of the program and go straight to that hilarious cat, Josh in Detroit. Good decision makingly yours, Bill O'Brien.
You know, I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
Signed, Denlesk's non-fake punter. Again, if you want to fake that punt in your own end on 4th and 4 because you don't want to give the ball back to Pat Mahomes because you know your defense is not going to make a play, yeah, I guess, but you better make it. And again, and to me, it's all the more curious that you make that call after not going for it on 4th and 1 from their 13. Dear Rome, loved Bill O'Brien's decision to run that fake punt up 17 on his own 31. I'm sure that decision won't haunt him for the rest of his life. Regards, Bobby Dasmati. Thank you, Alvin. Mitch from Buffalo, sending it. Wore James Kelly's arms looking like those inflatable tube men that you see outside of car dealerships. Great, Mitch. Now you're recycling Matt in LA's takes. That's not exactly sending it, is it, Mitchell? See what else we got. Almost. Hey, Rome, there's a lot to unpack in the divisional round. But the first thing I can confirm is the 49ers defense is devastating. 7 first downs. Kirk Cousins may have won a big game on the field, but he is watching an even bigger one from his couch. Look for the Niners to swarm Rodgers all evening again on their way to what will amount to a Super Bowl championship. Shane in SLO. Plenty of time to get into that. But that is how it went the first time. That was a beatdown they put on Green Bay the first time. I'm going to argue, though, that Green Bay is not the same team now that they were then. But I will pose the question. Does Green Bay's best beat San Francisco's best? We didn't get anywhere near Green Bay's best last time out. But does their best beat San Francisco's best? I don't know if I can make that argument. Let me ask you this. You know, and Aaron Rodgers looked like Aaron Rodgers last night. You know what you're going to get from him. You know what you'll get from the surefire Hall of Famer on the big stage. Do you know what you're going to get from Jimmy G? Like, if they need him to go out there and make plays and make something out of nothing and win that game, can he? Maybe. Maybe. He hasn't had to yet, though. And finally, Rome. I love Richard Sherman's attitude. Dude is very humble. Signed, that woman's soccer goalie who beats up her cousins. Wow, bro. What a reach. What a stretch that was. Hey, Steve, did you wake up this morning thinking about, like, how could I work in, quote, that women's soccer goalie into a take? Oh, I know. That's it. Rome just gave me what I needed. Quote, I love Richard Sherman's attitude. Dude is very humble. Signed, the woman's soccer goalie who beats up her cousins.
Don't you ever talk about me.
That is one of the greatest lines ever. Hope Solo is going freaking psychotic. She's beating people up. Go ahead, I challenge you. Find me a better line. And we need help. And we need help. Find me a better line. I want to be very clear about this. Not only do I not have an issue with Richard Sherman, not only do I not have an issue with what Richard Sherman said, I love the guy. Love the guy. Couldn't respect the guy any more than I do. He's a damn good player, and he's not afraid to tell you. Not only is he not afraid to tell you I'm a damn good player, he wants to know why you won't give him credit for being a damn good player. His point being, why are you doing this? if anybody else in my position made the number of plays that I made, they'd be deified. Yet you're tearing me down and making excuses for me every single time. Why? Look at the numbers. In fact, I don't need to make that argument for him. Nobody can make that argument for him better than him. And I'm here for it. That's not the guy. That's not Hope Solo's cousin or nephew or whoever he was. That's Parody Larry. And, you know, I might have to go through ancestry, but I don't think they're related. When we come back, NFL Network reporter Tom Pelissero joins us. Pat Forty next hour to break down the Natty Championship. Who you got? I'm telling you, the money. If you follow this type of thing, the money is all flowing to LSU. You going against the grain, or are you on that bandwagon? Time now for a sports update.
Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. If you're on hold, stay there. Plenty of time for your telephone calls on the other side. But as promised, we're joined right now by an NFL Network reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Pelissero. He joins us right now. Tom, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm hanging in, Jim. 3 weeks till Super Bowl Sunday. Let's do this.
I hear you, Tom. Exactly. All right, so there are a number of pieces of coaching and personnel moves that I want to get to shortly, but you were covering the Vikings-Niners on Saturday. One of the talking points going into the game was about Adam Thielen's ankle. What had you heard before the game, and what do you make of the way he played?
Well, it was a bizarre situation in practice where a teammate's cleat basically goes through the back of his sock, tears up his ankle. He's bleeding. Teammates are panicking. He reaches down, feels his own Achilles, realizes it's intact, but he had to get 4 stitches put in there. It was a scary situation. He was able to tape it up, go out there and play. No real effect. You know, the bigger issue for the Vikings was just they seemed to run out of gas. They were still, as badly as the numbers ended up, they were still in that game midway through the third quarter till, you know, there's a miscommunication. Thielen cuts off a route. Kirk Cousins thinks he's going to keep running. It's an interception, game turning. The field got tilted. And anytime a team runs 47 times on you, you're probably not winning that game.
Tom Pelissero joining us. In fact, I was going there next because San Francisco kicked the field goal coming out of halftime to make it 17-10. But to your point, on Minnesota's first possession, Sherman does pick off Cousins. What was your reaction, though, as that play was unfolding?
Well, I was watching it through binoculars in the press box, and the moment you see it, you realize this is just a situation where it's a route where Kirk thinks he's going to carry it through. Sherman's got the inside track on him, which is why I think Thielen settles down there. Cousins just throws the ball in the wrong spot. I mean, it's a great read by Richard Sherman. It's also just, you know, one of those things that happens sometimes when you're trying to go up against a scheme like the 49ers. You know, one thing that their defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh, did that was really impressive in that game was he mixed up their fronts. They were constantly moving around those defensive linemen. They go against that scheme all the time in practice. Gary Kubiak, who's with the Vikings, working with Kevin Stefanski this past year, he learned under, of course, Mike Shanahan. It's the Kyle Shanahan system. They see that every single day in practice. By moving around the defensive linemen, what you do is you keep the offensive linemen from knowing where your guys are going to be so they can't tee off on you. And that's why part of why the 49ers dominated the line of scrimmage. Don't get me wrong. They got some really, really good players up there, but anytime you challenge the target points against that type of a running game, that's how you bottle up Dalvin Cook to the point that he's non-factor like he was on Saturday.
Tom Pelissero joining us and breaking it down. I want to get back to Stefanski and Saleh in a minute, but what about the back end? Like, for instance, you reported before the game the Vikings were going to take some shots at 49ers DB Akella Witherspoon. He was ultimately replaced in that game by Emmanuel Mosley. What did Minnesota see that let them think they could have that kind of success against him? And then how big of a concern is that cornerback spot for San Francisco moving forward?
Well, Kevin Stefanski is a guy who always consults, the analytics departments. He wants a lot of numbers. You know, one thing that the Vikings had seen was that Akella Witherspoon was vulnerable on go balls, that you could take him deep. Sure enough, they do it on the second drive of the game. Maybe they did that too soon. Maybe they should have kept him out there longer because that was the last play, I think, that we saw Witherspoon playing that side of the field. You know, they felt like that was a vulnerability that they could attack. They had a second chance, same side of the field. It was after Mosley took over. But they had another chance to go deep, and the ball was a little bit underthrown. Diggs was not able to come back and get it. You know, it's hard for the Vikings when you're built everything around the running game and playing to your defense. If you can't run the football and you're always in second and third and intermediate, to have Kirk Cousins dropping back 30 times, ask guys like Riley Reiff, And then Rashad Hill, who had to take over at right tackle because Brian O'Neill got a concussion on that that shot he took from Nick Bosa. It's tough to say you got to now go single block Bosa and D Ford and these guys. You know, they were outmatched, and that showed up in how much Cousins was, you know, he was sacked six times. He got hit a bunch more. They just weren't able to move him around the way that they were hoping to.
Tom Pelissero joining us. He's with NFL Network and NFL.com. So, Tom, what about Stefanski and Robert Saleh? I mean, it's kind of interesting in that it's a battle between two candidates for the Browns head coaching job, and Stefanski, the guy who does not win, ends up getting that gig. So why was that their call, and what kind of a coach are they getting in Stefanski?
Kevin Stefanski was always going to be one of the front runners for that job because he was a finalist last year. Remember, you had John Dorsey, who was the GM at that point. He favored Freddie Kitchens. He did not want to disrupt what they seemed to be building the second half of the 2017 season with Freddie Kitchens as the play caller, that relationship that he had with Baker. You also have this other faction, Paul DePodesta, who lives out there in California, former baseball executive, heavy on the analytics side. They brought him in about 4 years ago to be their chief strategy officer. In that time, the Browns' strategy has changed two or three times. They've gone full analytics in the Sashi Brown era. Then they've swung all the way back to the full football side with John Dorsey. Now, again, you're going to the analytics side. DePodesta was running the search. It was extremely unique. You know, some of the candidates they brought to the building in Berea, Ohio, those candidates were able to meet with a variety of people in the organization. But for people like Stefanski, the traveling party did not include any quote-unquote football people. It was Jimmy Haslam, his son-in-law JW, as well as Paul DePodesta and their cap guy, Chris Cooper. So the interviews were not drawn up here. Show me an inside zone on the whiteboard. No, it was just about leadership qualities. How can you fit into what we want to do, the way we want to communicate with the analytics department on the game plans? It's going to be a really unique setup here, you know, regardless of who they bring in to be the general manager, because they're approaching this a little bit differently. The one thing I know about Stefanski, listen, this guy was hired in 2006 by the Vikings to be Brad Childress's assistant, not assistant coach, his assistant. He went from there to coach in several different positions to eventually becoming the offensive coordinator, built strong relationships with players. He is loved in that Vikings locker room, and he has a reputation for being very cool-headed, able to work with anybody, and he's going to have to because they want a very collaborative approach now to try to turn the Browns around.
I mean, it sure seems like the model has changed, and not just for them, but as you look around the NFL, Tom Pelissero joining us. And to that point, speaking of head coaches, Tom, I thought you had a fascinating piece with Mike McCarthy last month. Your colleague Jane Slater was on this show last week. She said it was so good that you deserve 10% of McCarthy's salary. Before we get into the actual content, how did that piece come to be? How did that come about?
Well, I appreciate Jane saying that, but I'm pretty sure that check is not coming. I've known Mike McCarthy for a long time. I was on the Packers beat for the Green Bay Press Gazette circa 2007 when they made their last NFC Championship run with Brett Favre as the quarterback. And so, you know, when Mike got let go, and there was a lot of stuff that was said and written about him, there was that extensive Bleacher Report article that contains certain accusations about the relationship between McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, among other things. Mike took some shots there, and so I happened to be out there in August for training camp. I called Mike. We got together, just talked, not talking about doing a story, but just talked. And it was obvious at that point that he was really diving in and doing some stuff. He wasn't sitting around. He was still living in the Green Bay area. That's the crazy thing. You know, he had a knee surgery, which was performed across the street from Lambeau Field. So he's literally driving right by like a week after he's fired. People are seeing him. He's still around. He lived there for the entire year, but he wasn't wallowing. You know, he really wanted to dive back in and do it the right way. You know, there's probably some coaches who have won a Super Bowl and been to the playoffs nine times, and, you know, you're just hoping for a multi-million-dollar payday. You can kind of treat it like a retirement job. That's not McCarthy. You know, when he was telling me about he's got these coaches that he's working with, Jim Haslett and Frank Sabetti Jr. and these guys, they're moving into this. He built this giant barn. It's basically an outsized man cave behind his house. It's got living quarters. So, like, Haslett and Cignetti and these guys would just move in for a week every month, and they just, you know, dawn till dusk, go through tapes, study trends, dive into analytics, and study, you know, everything, officiate, take a 360-degree view of it. You know, I said it would be a great story if you would let us come in and shoot this sometime. And so, sure enough, got to mid-November as this thing started becoming more real. He was super open with us. There's even stuff, you know, on the cutting room floor. He took us over to the Packers Hall of Fame where he's got all of his, you know, playbooks and philosophical stuff, old quarterback school tapes and things going back to the 1990s. really cool because he's a guy who's got a long history. He won over 61% of his games in Green Bay. I don't care who your quarterback is, that's impressive. But he's also really trying to evolve. And he says he's going to be a better coach. He says he wants to go in, build it the right way, try to win them all. And he ends up in a spot in Dallas with a quarterback, Dak Prescott, who, you know, funny enough, we were sitting there watching tape of him and how he liked Dak, how he'd get into rhythm on some of those, you know, deep passing plays and things like that. He's impressed with that quarterback, and I'll be really interested to see what he's able to do with him.
Tom Pelissero joining us. Again, I can't stress this enough. This is amazing to me because when guys lose their jobs, often you'll see them take a little bit of time. Maybe they'll travel around, spend some time with some other coaches or some other staffs and take some notes, and they try to get themselves back together. This guy literally had that whole facility built, and he brought guys in, and they moved in with him, and they went about it every single day. Like, I've never seen anything like this before. What about those assistants, Tom? Were they promised, can you get a sense, were they promised a position with him, or were they doing it also to evolve and improve themselves?
Well, the plan going along was that those guys would be a part of the staff. Now, Cignetti actually took the job as the offensive coordinator at Boston College, so he ended up with an opportunity. He went out there. Scott McCurley is expected to be part of the staff. I believe Jim Haslett in some capacity. He's not going to be the defensive coordinator. That's going to be Mike Nolan. And McCarthy's building a hell of a staff down there with John Bones Fossil from the Rams coming over. That was a coup to be able to bring him in. But yeah, they were, you know, working together. I mean, these guys had two giant whiteboards in this, you know, we're in the man cave. So he's got like, you know, pinball machines and a pool table. It's all just covered. There's just whiteboards and stuff. And they've got everything mapped out, the entire calendar from what they're going to do in OTAs through mini camp, through training camp, like down to the letter of how they're going to build every department, the technology department, video. He's talking about mental health resources. I mean, you got a lot of time on your hands, and they actually had a chance now to step back, figure all that stuff out. So, you know, the plan was walk in the door, you know, flip on the lights and go to work. You know, in Dallas, you know, you're never going to be short on resources, and McCarthy's got a lot of big ideas of how he's going to build that thing.
And it worked. It worked. He got the gig. All right, so a final thought. As you mentioned, Tom, you covered the Packers back in the day. So what are your quick thoughts about a Packers 49ers NFC Championship game?
I think you saw yesterday what still makes the Packers so dangerous is that we have, over the course of this season, seen a Packers team that's won, what, 13, 14 games now with Aaron Rodgers playing at an above-average level. This has not been 500 yards every week, scoring 35 points a game. Their numbers are not that different statistically than they were a year ago when everybody wanted Mike McCarthy run out of town because the offense was struggling. No, they put money into the defense. Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, those guys have made a huge impact. They were never free agent players in the past, but Brian Gutekunst made a couple of really good bets on those guys. The running game has been better with Aaron Jones. And then when they need Rodgers to make those big throws, the couple of third downs in the fourth quarter yesterday, that's vintage Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he doesn't need to put the entire team on his back. This is probably the most balanced Packers team that they have had in the Rodgers era. You know, if you're the 49ers right now, you're not necessarily saying, you know, the end-all be-all is stopping Rodgers. But boy, in those big-time moments, you better hope Bosa and D Ford and those guys can get after him because 12 can still make those plays.
And then a really quick follow, Tom. Do you think that they can keep Aaron Rodgers clean enough for him to do what he does?
Run the football. They got to watch that tape. It's, again, Matt LaFleur, the Packers coach, comes out of that same system. You know, former Kyle Shanahan assistant going back to their days together in Washington and later in Atlanta. So it's going to be the same thing. They're going to have to learn from that tape. What does Robert Saleh throw at him? Can they figure out some counters to be able to get Aaron Jones going? That chess match between two guys who know each other well is going to be one of the really interesting storylines in that game.
A ton of great information in that interview. He is an NFL Network reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Pelissero. Tom, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time. That was great.
Pleasure, Jim. Anytime.
Thank you. Tom Pelissero. Good, good content. Really good information. All right, so we gear up for hour number two right now. 1-800-636-8686. I have thoughts on that. And as you can tell, I really was fascinated by Mike McCarthy and the way he went about reinventing himself. Now, he might say, that's not what I was doing. I was not trying to, quote, reinvent myself. I was just trying to get better. I was just trying to evolve. I was trying to figure out how to improve upon the things that I did in Green Bay. But the fact that this guy's got this, and I mentioned it before Tom came on last week, he's got this gigantic barn that he set up as a facility. And then he brought in some other coaches that had time on their hands, and he moved them in, and they lived there a week at a time, and then get up and grind all day long and prepare for the next opportunity. Also, stay abreast of the latest trends in the game. Pretty fascinating to me. And it worked. You got the Cowboys gig. We'll talk national championship game next hour. I have more thoughts on what happened over the weekend. Got to revisit the picks from the flight deck. Then more. Phone lines are open. 1-800-636-8686. Do not go anywhere. Hour number two coming up next.